Welcome back, Nod Pod. Thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode of Chasing Heroin. So today's episode, I interview Claire Bays. Claire is a wellness and mindset coach. She's a personal trainer. She has her own app where she can give you like meal plans and workouts, and is also a social media content creator and influencer. And I didn't even know this when I found her and decided to interview her. So I knew that she was in recovery and she's got this cool platform and she combines fitness and recovery, which I love, obviously. And then when I was listening to her on some other episodes, I realized that her like rock bottom before she got sober, for one thing, was recent-ish. It was 2 years ago. And it was something that has probably happened to some of you or certainly someone that you know. And I thought, I can't believe I haven't had anybody on the show yet that this has happened to. She was in a situation where something really embarrassing happened and somebody filmed it and posted it on social media. And it got like thousands of views. And that shit happens like all the time now. And I've thought before so many times, like, I'm so grateful that there weren't like camera phones when I was a teenager in my 20s, because I did some like really stupid shit that would have haunted me forever. And that happens to people, and that might have happened to you or someone that you know. And that happened to her, and her mindset around it and her attitude around it is amazing and so admirable. She's like, yep, it happened. It was all my fault in the first place. And it led me to this great path. And, you know, now I'm able to do things without worrying about what people think, because they all had this horrible idea of me. Anyways, it's just like the best attitude and a great way to process something like that happening. So if that's happened to you, or if you know someone that has happened to, like, send them this episode, because I can't even imagine how challenging that would be. And she's walked through it quickly with like a lot of grace and what I think is a really helpful attitude. So we talk about that, right? We talk about her drinking and using, and then that happens and she gets into recovery. And there's just like a lot of wisdom in this episode. I learned a lot from her. We talk about binge eating, because often eating stuff comes up. As soon as the substance stuff goes down, eating stuff can come up. And she pointed out that like, if she's not as spiritually fit, she doesn't necessarily crave alcohol, but eating stuff comes up. And that's true for me too. Like, I don't really ever want to do drugs anymore. That hasn't happened in a long time, but my eating stuff will be crazy and I'll totally like binge eat. And so we talked about how to manage that. And I learned so much from her. I know you guys are going to learn a lot from her. So as always, guys, please let me know what you think of the episode. She also says several times in this episode, DM her if you're looking for resources or you need to reach out to someone. She says, DM me, like, I'm available. So follow her, Claire Bays. All of her information is in the show notes. And I hope you guys love the show and get as much out of it as I did. We'll see you next week. Claire, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We just chatted already, you guys, for like 30 minutes. This always happens. Every once in a while, I get like a guest on, a woman typically who's in fitness and sober. And then like this happens. And 30 minutes in, I'm like, yeah. All right, let's just hit record. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it so much. I am so excited to learn more about you. I've done like a deep dive. Anytime I have a guest and I tell them this, I'm like, this is going to sound so like freaky, but I'm like, I've done a deep dive into your brain for the past 4 days, like consuming your content, listening to you on podcasts, and I'm excited to learn like even more about you. So the first thing I want to ask you is, you're just over 2 years sober now, correct? It was April? Okay. So in 2 years, you've done a lot. Like, you've moved, as we were just talking about, and we'll talk about as a little bit more. Have your own app online. You're a trainer at like a really high-end, well-known facility in Austin, Texas. Yeah. You have a podcast. You have 40,000 followers on Instagram, which in 2 years in this market, that's a lot. You know, that's very difficult to do. You've done a lot. And when I was listening to your story, and we'll granularly go through these things, you did a shit ton from the rip, the 75 hard, you moved, you reached out to that fitness brand, and it was following a really humiliating, publicly humiliating rock bottom. How did you have the confidence to do that stuff right away? Because at 9 years and older than you, I barely texted you. Thank God I have Doug in my life, because Doug will be like, quit being a pussy. You want me to just text him? And I'm like, can you? And then he's like, babe, can you talk to Janine? Yeah. I still struggle. How did you have the confidence then to just like make these moves at 28 years old, coming off the heels of what had just happened to you, which we'll talk about. But how did you do that?
Yeah. I mean, one, just, I appreciate you. I love that you did the deep dive and have this information. It just like is really, really cool, because that's the work that you're putting into your thing. So like, I just want to acknowledge, like, thank you for the work that you're doing. Much less like the deep dive. I mean, it's just cool to see that you're that dedicated to this thing. That's dope. So, I mean, as far as the courage goes, what comes to mind, and I love that you did the deep dive, because one thing I'll just go ahead and disclose is that I've come to, in sobriety, understand that I'm on my best days, highly delusional, right? So I'm a delusional creature. Nature, yes. Now, if I know it, I'll be honest. I thankfully have that going. But the problem is, do I know it, right? So when it comes to the courage to do these things, I think that that public humiliation piece that sounds like maybe you want to go into further detail on, that really was a beautiful tool for me, right? Okay. So in the moment, it was tragic. It was humiliating. Yeah. It was just consuming. But what happened there was all of these people that I was so desperate for their approval, my whole life, it was all out for them to see that I was making messes and like really, really, really bad ones. And so all of the sudden, I think that that really, really contributed tremendously to this whole courage thing.
Okay.
All of a sudden, when I chose to get sober, it was like, you know, it came down to, I look in the mirror and I don't even recognize that girl anymore. I don't know who that is. I certainly don't trust her. I don't like her, any of those things, right? And so that's a really scary place to be. But I love to say that like pain and trauma can bear beauty in its wake. It's true. And so what did it do? It did that, right? And so it just became this whole process over the course of that first year in particular of like, who is Claire? Like that was what I set off on when I went into sobriety and of course had tremendous help. I'm certainly involved in a recovery program and I'm not delusional today about the reality that like who I am today for today is largely, if not entirely, thanks to what they've taught me.
Sure.
Which is great because then that means that I don't have the answers. They do. And you can reach it. Like anybody's got access to it. So the courage piece was simply like, you know, y'all no longer approve of me anyway. So screw it. You know, I'm just going to go in heavy on like, what do I think? Who am I? And I will say that launching into 75 hard, I am somebody who will make a decision and go straight through the wall. I mean, that's what I did in alcoholism, right? Like all those years of like, hey, I'm going to discover the walls there because I'm going to hit it head first. And I'm going to fully give myself a concussion because I'm going to repeatedly do it.
Right.
You know, so with business decisions, which is what I think a lot of these maybe identify as, what is the worst that could happen? You know, and I used to say that in some of the actions that I would take pre-recovery too, is I'm like, yeah, so, you know, I fly halfway around the world to do this thing and I don't even know if I'm coming home, but like, what's the worst that could happen? It falls on its face and I go back and I start over.
So when I ask that question, and this is where my roadblock is, what's the worst that could happen? I could look stupid. So what do you think when I say that? I could look dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. So then it's be at peace with the reality that you're imperfect forever and ever. You know, and it's okay, right? The fact that you can even acknowledge that you have the fear is already a tremendous value, right? And so then it's okay. So I'm afraid to do the thing because I'm afraid that I'll look dumb. So let's play that out. Okay. Who are you looking dumb to?
Like the person that I'm, say it's to get someone on the show, like the person, I guess. And me maybe, because like I failed.
This is a great, okay, so let's play this out. This is a great example of, you know, one, you're actually going to, the more you flex the muscle, the more it grows, with reps comes ease kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you can apply that anywhere, right? And so you come from the fitness industry, so that super clicks for you. And so that's the thing of like, the more of this that you do, the easier it will become. And then when it comes to the individual that you're considering like reaching out to or whatever, and you have the fear around, what if they think I look stupid? Were they even actively a part of your life to begin with before? Like, do they even know who you are?
No.
So then who cares what they think? If it resonates with you, when I started to create content, and don't get me wrong, it's been a journey, because when I started to do that in 2022, no one was watching, really.
Right.
And now all these people are watching. So all of a sudden I've had to really walk through this journey with social media. But, you know, it's like when I started off on that journey, what my thoughts were when I chose to create and post things, because certainly I got a lot of flack, you know, where I lived, the things I was choosing to do. People were, you know, they would be taking videos of me in the corner and sending them in group chats and all sorts of things. And I knew it.
Are you serious? Like at the gym or when you guys were?
Yeah. But it's not because these people are bad people. You know, I'm doing something so different than anything that they're used to.
Yeah.
And so either way, it's just not my problem. I'm no longer living for them. The gift of that public humiliation was those people that I was so, and don't get me wrong, that's a journey. I can't tell you how many times I've had to pray for forgiveness for those situations, you know, how much resentment I carried towards certain individuals for months, years. So giving grace to the fact that those things take time to actually heal and recover. But it just always was like, are they why I'm doing this? So my like North Star for that when I started to do it was, am I hurting anyone? Am I having a good time? This is probably okay. You know? And so yet again, I'm not saying that's the roadmap for anybody else, but those are things that really I took into consideration. And I am reestablishing a positive relationship with social media because what happened over this past year is, or this year, you know, is I've come across some adversity in life like we always do because life is going to happen on life's terms and all these people are watching. And so I kind of muted myself and had to reorient my relationship with it. And so thankfully, I'm kind of like coming back out of my shell on there again, which is so exciting.
Okay.
With grace and space to the fact that, you know, we realize we know only a little.
Right.
More will be revealed.
Right. Well, I want to talk about that, what you just said, but let's back up a little to you and how we get to that moment. Because, you know, I realized when I was listening to you on other shows, what happened has probably happened to some of my women audience for sure. And maybe some of the men. And I've never had anyone on that did happen to. So I'm so happy. I'm very grateful to have you sharing this experience because I know it's going to, I'm getting chills as I say this. I guarantee you with my demographic, this has happened. And so someone is going to be like, oh my God, like the shame of that. And now look at this amazing woman who walked through it and is talking about like, okay. So let's talk about how we got there. You are from Oklahoma originally, which is so cute. Not to sound like some asshole Californian, you know, but I'm like, that's so cute. The middle of the country. I sound like such a California asshole, but that's so cute. So you're from Oklahoma and you start drinking heavily when? What does this whole all look like?
Yeah. So I start consuming alcohol when I'm 13 and I black out the first time and I love it. It's around the time of puberty.
Yeah.
And so I was extremely awkward looking and this big old smile that you see here today. Well, my head wasn't always this big. And so it's big for my face. And anyway, girls or kids go through puberty and through that stage of life, sometimes body, whatever. Anyway, so I'm not desired and I'm not, you know, whatever. It happened. It was kind of like a perfect storm of like, I start to consume my alcohol right around the time that I start to go through puberty. And so what do I notice? That suddenly this substance mutes this fear of what you think, or at least, you know, it numbs all of this stuff. And so I come out of my shell and I come out of my shell conveniently around the time that I'm starting to grow into my more adult whatever.
Right. Okay.
And so it was just a perfect storm for, I start drinking alcohol and I'm immediately getting all of this external validation. I am fun.
Yeah.
I am pretty. I am all of these things that I wasn't identified as before. And man, I need you to love me. From literally, if you took it back to childhood, you will see in the photos with the cousins at the events for the family that everybody's there. And what is Claire doing? Jumping with her hands wide open. Everybody look at me. And so that still exists within me today. I just try to be aware of what it's being used for and hopefully being positive. But anyway, so I've been desperate for you to love me my whole life, right? And so alcohol comes into my life at the perfect storm moment of, oh, now I get all of this attention and you love me. Cool. I'm going to do more of this. And so, and I'm not aware that the disease is what it is. I'm not aware that I have alcoholism. It took a long time to learn that. So anyway, my drinking career was 15 years. And do you want to go straight to the end of it, to that specific event?
Sure. Yeah. So, well, along the way it sounds like you were kind of functional though, right? Cause you obviously, you went to college, right? And
no.
Okay. So you graduated high school though.
I did get into real estate. Fewer classes than I actually did. Like I didn't go very much, but I did get my diploma because I went to the principals and requested that they fix my attendance for years.
Okay. Okay. Because you got into real estate and were obviously successful in real estate during this time though, as you were drinking, right? And the reason I point that out is because there are often people that are functional as they are consuming substances too much. And I always think that that's such an interesting question for people to evaluate. And I think that hearing stories like yours while they're in that space can be helpful. Because my big thing was, I'm fine. I have a job. I'm fine. I have a job. I barely had that job. Mm-hmm. And for me, that denial took me into like much deeper places. Like the Coke alcohol years were like, I always say functional and they kind of weren't, but I was like teaching fitness and you know what I mean? So,
totally.
So during that time you're drinking and you obviously get licensed in real estate. You're working in your hometown doing real estate.
I moved to Norman, Oklahoma. So I'm from Shawnee, Oklahoma originally. And I moved to Norman when I was 20, 21, something like that. And so 45 minutes away. So still very nearby, still in Oklahoma. And I actually was bartending, bar managing for a few years. Okay. And then at the age of 25, I decided, okay, I should probably do something different. And, or I was about to be 25. And so that's whenever I got my real estate license. And I had done a handful of other things. I mean, if we were to look back at my like career of jobs, it's like hilarious because I was always holding 2 to 3 at all times. My athletic life actually didn't come till later. And right. So I had like no belief in self there. And that took many years to build in my adult life. However, belief in self and business was always high because I wasn't given things growing up.
Right.
And so I had to work from a very young age for everything. And I'm very grateful for that. And so anyway, when it comes to business, I was always just like, I'll figure it out. I'll get it done.
Like a hustler. You would have been the most fun bartender. I can picture you right now bartending. You would have been so fun, right?
It was a vibe.
Like, I'm sure you were like, because I was a bartender and I fucking hated it. I was the most miserable bartender ever. I was like, what do you want? Like, I'm not making you a fancy drink, but I can picture you being like, what do you like to drink? I bet you would like, nobody drinks a grasshopper anymore. I don't know why that just came into my head, but like, I bet you would like a grasshopper. Like, I can just picture you being like the most fun bartender. Does anything jump to mind of like, because some of the most fun I ever had in my entire life was when I was bartending at this super redneck bar in Athens, Georgia, which is where I sort of went to college. Do you have any off the rip, like funny bartending stories, like maybe the funniest story that happened with a client while you were there or something?
Oh my gosh. Well, you bartend for long enough and you've got stories out the wazoo. And
totally.
What I'll say is one of the things that I would even say while I was bartending was like, I really enjoyed doing that because I watched what everyone else did and it made me really able to justify my own behavior. So there's that's a bit more of a serious note, but it's real. I mean, all sorts, you name it, people peeing themselves and like, I don't know, like there's so many different things that, but it was fun. I will say what it was off. So I had the opportunity to, you know, manage a bar for a few years and during that time create their entire menus and it was really, really fun. It was fun so much of the time. And it was like a circus for me. Okay. So there were a couple of nights that I was the bartender that everybody knew these nights. And I kept that routine for years. And so like, it was like, okay, these are Claire's nights. Mm-hmm. And it was a full blown circus act. Like I might as well have had a trapeze back there. And it was so fun. And, you know, so there were, so
did you flip bottles? I was never able to do that.
Absolutely could do a number of different things. Yes.
Okay. I couldn't do any of that shit.
It was also just like the speed at which that I could like mow down, like, cause the one that I was at for the longest period of time was like multiple bar tops and the speed at which that I could like fly through this thing and deliver. And it was so stimulating, right? Like it's so fun.
Totally. It's a vibe. Like you said, it's a vibe to be behind the bar as a young woman and in charge. And you've got your regulars who fucking love you.
Yes.
And would do anything for you. It's like a family. It's like this, you know?
Yes. And here's the thing for anybody that's listening that maybe is like, that's where they're at, right? So maybe they are a bartender right now and they're like trying to figure out, I don't know. And this is me just speaking from like a thought. This isn't even like I haven't executed on this, but I've thought about, you know, so because that was so much fun. Cocktail waitressing was so much fun. Mm-hmm. Those types of jobs were so much fun. I am in a position today that I don't want to work with alcohol. That's not something I want to do. So, but those types of jobs are so fun. And here's the thing. A barista, there are so many different like local groovy coffee shops that if you're in recovery and you still really enjoy that, like there's lots of places that do fast pace. I mean, the recipes are expansive. And so I have like seriously considered, don't be surprised if at some point in my journey, you just find out that I'm over here being a barista part-time because I want to do it.
So Claire's Coffee Corner.
I don't know if I want to own it right now. Someone else can own it. I'll just come in. But like, I'll be my corner on the days that I'm there.
That is a really good idea though. Barista, if you still want that environment, that creative making things environment, serving people, that's actually a really good idea. I like that.
I don't know. I just think it's cool.
Totally. Yeah. No, it was like way fun. So bartending, real estate, yada, yada. Is this a small town that you're in?
Norman that I was in for the majority of it wouldn't be considered a small town. I think that the population there is like somewhere around 70,000. So not small.
Okay.
Not
big. Okay. Okay. And I'm asking because the people that now we walk into what happened. So when did this incident happen? It was April, right, of 2020? It wasn't even that. When did this happen?
Yeah. So just by the way, it looks like the population as of recently in Norman is 128,000. So I just don't
know.
So anyway, okay. I mean, it's not small. Like my hometown.
I love that you just looked that up.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, I was like, I really don't want to say this wrong. And that was a bit off. So, okay. So we get to, you want to go into my moment of.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So alcoholism is a progressive illness. And so all of these times that we just referenced that were so fun, they were so fun, right? But then here's the problem. I'm an alcoholic. And so I overshoot the mark every time. And so I always, when drinking, had the behavior of blacking out. It was extremely normal where I was and the people I chose to hang out with. And don't get me wrong, there were groups of people that I became friends with largely through like fitness communities that I would maybe start with them and then need to go somewhere else to finish because I knew that my behavior was going to get too strange. Or with my colleagues, I could start at the happy hour, but I knew I was going to need to go somewhere else to behave like I needed to behave. And I didn't have the awareness to be able to tell you that, but that's what I was doing. And I was doing that for years. And so anyway, it just progressed. It progressed further and further. And year over year, more strange things started to occur. Of course, there were traumatic events all the way back in high school. I mean, you know, it started to pile up. But you don't know any better. And when your environment is just behaving that way, you just don't know there's anything wrong. It's just what people experience.
When you say traumatic events, you mean, what do you mean by that?
Just, I mean, blacking out, waking up places with people that you don't know, whatever. Okay, sure. Yeah. So things like that, you know, I mean, I can think of crazy moments that I've experienced. You know, I forget a lot of them a lot of the time, and then they come back up and it's like, you know, you wake up and I've got like an instance that is pretty wild to me that, you know, I wake up one morning and I'm like laying in a kitchen and I'm around the age of 20 at this time, maybe 21. And there's I have a knife and chips. And I remember then that I was actually at a house party and someone pulled a knife on someone else. And because I was very intoxicated, I took the knife because I didn't want a stabbing to occur. So Sober Claire would never do this, okay? She's not even hopefully ever going to be in that room, much less do that thing.
Sober Claire never stops a knife fight.
Crazy. But anyway, so I take it and I leave and I wake up with it and I'm like, wow, that's a very dangerous, obviously that's not a situation you ever want to put yourself in. But
right.
The things that we will do when we are in alcoholism, it's scary. And so anyway, we've got all these things going on. And so it's a progressive illness. I get sober April 26th, 2021. And the reason I got sober. So my grandmother passed away February 13th that year. And my grandmother had the largest hand in raising me. She was very, very near and dear to my heart. And I will spend the rest of my life attempting to be as cool as she was. And so what a cool thing to get to strive towards. So she passes and I've heard of grief, but I've never dealt with it. And I select to opt out. And so that was like a very, you know, I went home to my hometown. I spent the first week there after she passed, handled all the things because I'm a doer. So I did stuff. And at the end of that week, everything's done. And now I have to go deal with myself. And I simply opted out. Now at this time, I am successful enough in real estate that I can often hire another agent to come open doors for me, do things like that. I can be gone a lot. I really enjoyed traveling. So I traveled a lot. And so I would travel and act up, right? But like it went, as soon as that happened, like it went up significantly. Like the downward spiral was so fast that it took less than 2 months after her passing for me to decide to get sober. Because by then the actions I was taking were off the charts. So my weekend travel excursions would go a day or two later. I'd have to fly back later, rebook flights. I was just not making it back home. I was just not doing well. And by this point, now we're looking at other substances. I'm taking in a lot of other things. One of the primary things for me by then was Adderall, was another thing, because at that point, now I can drink indefinitely.
Totally.
And you don't even know that I messed up. And that was just part of my story. So anyway, the event that occurs is I'm in another city, in another state, and I'm in a room that sober me would never be in, but I'm there. So I wake up and this girl is here and I don't know how I've gotten to this position. but I'm a blackout drinker. So that's not uncommon. Okay. So I don't know how I got here, but either way, here I am. She's on top of you. Well, I see her in the door and then she comes, gets on top of me. Okay. But yes. Yeah. And so she's very angry that I'm there and she has every right to be angry that I'm there. I should not be there. And I, trust me, don't want to be there. But either way, here I am because this is what I do. And so then she comes and she attacks me. She attacks the other person in the room and it gets recorded and uploaded to social media. And so the whole thing is now a spectacle and it was screen recorded, the spectacle that she chose to post. And yet again, I am sorry to this girl and I will be sorry to this girl for the rest of my life. And so that's really all I can say there is that as I say this, that might be like, oh my gosh, she did that. No, I got in that room. That was my doing. And so anyway, it gets uploaded and people from home, go ahead.
So for clarity, because I've heard you speak about it before and I just want to, so you hooked up with someone's boyfriend and she came home.
They were no longer together, but either way, they had very recent romantic history. So it might as well. Yes.
And she went over there and was like, who the fuck is this?
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I don't know what did or didn't happen, but here
I am. Okay. Yeah. And a friend was recording her and she jumped in bed and hit you, right? So you woke up to getting hit. Right. And that's what was recorded.
Yeah. And so the whole thing's recorded. And then there's all sorts of photos posted of me with mean things said over them, you name it, whatever. And it gets screen recorded. Here's the thing though. Like we have this phrase that we should not wish to, regret our past or wish to shut the door on it, which these can be like, this is ugly stuff.
Yeah.
You know, taking a look at this and being like, oh my gosh, that was me. That's ugly stuff. And the idea that this is going to become public so that people can hear that story, that's a part of my past. And right. I have to live with that. And I'm choosing to make it public, which is a very interesting thing to choose to do.
Yeah.
But it speaks to the fact that you can decide at any moment that you so choose, I don't want to be that way anymore. You have the opportunity to do that. And that was simply what, so either way, it gets posted and it gets people back home, get a hold of it and it gets spread like wildfire. So now hundreds, thousands, I don't know, of people that I know are consuming this. And so it was shattering for me because I was like, okay, I've been desperate for your approval. And now you're looking at this and there's no way that you can approve of this. Trust me, I don't approve of this. And for the first time ever, I have to own my actions. So blackout drinker Claire started blackout drinking at 13 years old. And she never owned that because it was normal to not own it. I don't know what happened. That's normal. And so finally, almost 29-year-old Claire wakes up in this situation, gets publicly humiliated. And finally, thank God, recognizes I have to do something about this. And if I continue to drink, I will ruin my life. I am actively ruining my life. And by then there's all sorts of other repercussions going on. I'm not doing my continuing education. I'm not doing my taxes. Like other things are unraveling as well. I am not in a good space. And like I said, by the time we arrive at sobriety, like I didn't even recognize myself anymore. I mean, I look in that mirror and I'm like, who's that? What is she doing? So it allowed me the opportunity to go, okay, if I can figure out how to get sober, then I don't black out. If I don't black out, I'm not in this room. And so I got sober.
So was that the last night you drank? That's it?
It was over the course of that weekend. I intook so many substances over the course of that weekend. Okay. By the time I flew home on April 26th. It's my mother's birthday. So my mother's birthday and my sobriety date are the same day.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that occurs and we have to do a police report over the incident. During that situation, I was saying, if I'm not blackout right here now. So no, I continued to, through the rest of that weekend, just continue to numb. And if you look at this, in February, it was, I don't want to deal with grief. I've heard of it. I'm not doing it. I'd rather be numb. I choose substances. So I chose substances for those following weeks and chose them so heavily that they got me into this place. And so, yeah.
Sure. So, okay. So I've got several questions here. Okay. So that happens. Somebody calls the cops. This is the actual details of how you get out of it, right? So you leave that room, but you're still out of town for a weekend. This is happening. When do you know it's been uploaded? How do you find out? Does someone tag you in something? How do you find out?
I found out immediately.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I was tagged in all sorts of things. And
so people were tagging you on Instagram and Facebook?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I was tagged. So I was aware. A very small handful of people that I know did reach out to me and say, are you okay? What's going on?
Okay. Okay. Because right now, we're 2 years post. You've obviously processed this a lot. You have a super healthy viewpoint. You're like, look, it got me here, blah, blah, blah. Like, I understand all that. But in those early days, in the aftermath, how did you actually feel? Like going to bed at night, laying, I'm just picturing myself closing my eyes, thinking about the people that have seen it. What did you actually, how did you feel at the time before you got to this healthy place? How did you feel then?
Desperate, humiliated. You want to talk about fear. I haven't lived sober since I'm 13. And suddenly I've come to the conclusion that I have to get sober. And I do not know if I am a person that is capable of doing that. Now, I have found times where I was writing as early as, and probably before, but I've found since 2017 that I was actually in a recent like journal I pulled out, whatever I saw, like me writing about desire to sober up. So I had been thinking about that for a long time. It was kind of a wild thing to see. I'm like, wow, I was writing about that for many years before I was actually able to do it. So I had known that my relationship with substances was not useful to me, but it was not ever so destructive and painful to really make me do the thing until that point. And then the pain and destruction reached my bottom. And it was like, okay, I cannot live this way. I cannot live this way. But yeah, I mean, desperate was definitely a good one, and humiliated.
That's so interesting to me, though, that when I ask you that, the primary pain isn't the, like, I mean, this was there, the humiliation of other people, but you remember in the early days, the big fear was, I have to get sober. That was the fear in the immediate aftermath. That was the thing that was the most devastating to you, was the idea of not drinking anymore.
Yes, because I didn't know if I could.
Right.
I had never done it. And yeah. So I didn't know how on earth someone does that. How do you actually go from being this person that's consumed substances since childhood to no longer consuming substances? How on earth do you do that?
How do you do that?
Thank goodness I have friends that showed me the way.
So you also said, and I heard you say this on, I think, Doug's show, and I love the way that you phrase this. I had heard of grief. I didn't know what it was. And I chose to opt out. That describes when my parents got divorced. I had heard of grief. I had never experienced it. And I don't think I've ever, when you said those words, I was like, that puts words to what I did. I opted out of that whole thing. I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm done with all the things. I'm done with everything you two idiots said. You wanted me to go to college? I'm not. I'm opting out of the whole thing. And that's such a great description of it. Like, I made a conscious choice to not be involved in the process of sadness. And I just like that phrasing. I opted out. And then I also heard you say somewhere else that, but when you opt out, you can't just opt out of one thing. What happens is you're opting out of everything, the duties that you're supposed to take care of and the good things, right? And you also brought up taxes. You're the only other person I've ever heard say this. I didn't pay my taxes for like a long time, for like 10 years. And I really believed that you didn't have to. Sounds like you had more awareness than me. I was like, I don't think anything is really going to come from this. Like, I think suckers pay taxes. What are they going to do? They're going to come find me?
Yeah.
The answer to which is yes. Yes, they will find you.
Yeah.
And I, to this day, make payments monthly to the fucking IRS from taxes I didn't pay as a spin teacher in 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, whatever. When I heard you say that, I was like, me too. I also wasn't paying my taxes. And it's just so like, it sounds dumb, but it's like a really embarrassing thing to like not do stuff like that. Like have your license or have car insurance or pay taxes. Like the things that other men and women seem to just do. And we're intelligent enough to do them, but like aren't, because we've opted out of those things too, you know?
Well, yeah. And there's also a detail that financial literacy is really, unfortunately, at this time, not really taught very well. And really? So don't get-
That's a good point.
Yeah. I didn't pay my taxes until I was 21 for some actions I took as an 18, 19 year old in a business endeavor that I chose to go into. And by the time that I got that together, I had a bill from the IRS for over $20,000. And so I'm 21. And I remember, you know, calling my mother and being distraught and being like, why didn't you warn me? And she's like, I've only ever been an employee. I didn't even know that that was an option, you know?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. and by the way, my mother is amazing, wonderful, love her dear. Like she's amazing. But like, you know, so it's okay whether or not it's alcoholism related or whatever, addiction related. Like financial literacy is a real struggle. And don't get it twisted. How many
That's
people come into sobriety and still neglect it later? I've done that. Okay. So it's just, you know, we're all just humans out here trying, but selectively the opt-out piece, you know, it's the selectively numb. That's what comes to my mind is just that, like, you know, I chose to numb this thing and I don't get to selectively numb. When I choose to be numb over here, I'm going to have to be numb over here. And that's not a price that I'm willing to pay anymore.
So when do you get to, you end up going to a 12-step meeting, right? At some point?
Yeah. Yeah. I reach out to a friend that I know is involved in a recovery program. And I say, hey, I need some help. I'm going to need to stop drinking. And so she met with me very shortly thereafter. And she provided me with some literature. And she said, if you leave from here and never drink again, I love you. And if you leave from here and go straight and get a drink, I love you. And it just meant so much to me. And it will always mean so much to me. And she's been instrumental in my sobriety. And because we don't know the depths that people need to go to. You know, we don't know. Yeah. We don't control that. We're not God. And so thankfully, she was a resource. I was able to get plugged into a program and those people taught me how to live.
So this was your first attempt. You're not a relapse. You're not a chronic relapser. Like, this is your first. This is it. This is the shebang. And it's been 2 years.
Relapse is not a part of my story.
That's awesome. Let's keep it that way.
Right, for sure.
You're over 2 years. You're good. And if you ever start to change your mind, fucking just call me. Don't be me. Be 31 and have a million years. So you do the program. Are you still involved in the program?
I am very heavily involved in recovery today.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So you then...
Let me say, here's the thing. I heard this last night and I loved it so much. My misery brought me to that place. And my gratitude keeps me there. And that's the truth. You know, my misery brought me to those communities. And the reason I stick around today is because I'm so grateful for them. And they keep my head on my shoulders because I am still a human. And when left to my own devices, I still make wonky decisions left and right. And I need support. And thankfully, it's out there.
So I'm going to jump ahead a little. I want to talk about that. But this is always a concept I ask people. Off air, I was telling you that, so like the concept of chasing heroin is that for me specifically, heroin, the substance led me to my inner heroin based on what you just said. Like I didn't think I would find the best version of me scraped out of the bottom of a spoon, but I did. That is where I found the best version of me. And so as a result, I am super, super grateful for all of the substance issues that I'm so glad I was a drug addict. Like seriously. Are you actually now, are you grateful that you were an alcoholic because now you get to be this person?
The resources that have been provided to me, I wouldn't trade for the world. Now, our experiences just are what they are, right? And so we have to like make meaning of things because that's just like how our brains work. And so can I look back on many situations and feel sadness for that girl? Yes. For sure. But any experience that has been adversity has also led me to a better place. And so whether that's in business or whether that's with substance or whether that's with a relationship or anything like that, you know, I haven't actually publicly spoken about it at all. And so we're going to do it real quick for just a second here. But I went through a breakup this year and I love that person today, right now, love that person. And what's been so beautiful about that is that people show up in your life and they are your teachers if you let them be. You know? And so experiences are your teachers if you let them be. And so wisdom is really just the ability to take your own advice.
So I love something that you just said, because I, and my audience knows this, I mentioned to you off air, I sold my business. And while it was technically a good deal, I've been struggling a lot with lately regret around it and feeling like really sad. And I didn't fail if you look at the money, but I feel like maybe I failed my people, maybe I failed me. But what you just said is I always talk about how I'm so grateful for my addiction for what it got me. But like I could apply that, I could apply that consciously to this thing too, and let that be a positive learning example, well, right? And for some reason, I don't do that. I only do it with my addiction so far.
Yeah, well, here's the deal too. So you get the opportunity to grow. And so that was a season of your life and you provided these people with beautiful opportunities for experiences through the community and things like that. So like you've done so much there and you get the opportunity to grow. and whether or not you can identify it as like a grand slam or like, hey, it felt like a misstep. It's a step. And so then you're already like, you get the opportunity today right now to explore if I want to continue to be of service to that community, I get the opportunity to do so. How do I want to do so? It takes shape differently.
Right. Also, I want to say, I want to thank you for just sharing that about the breakup. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So how long ago was that?
In June.
Oh, recent.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So as it was happening, did you consciously think, I know how to walk through pain. I can use those tools now. I mean, obviously you did because we're very close to it. It's not like you're telling me this a year later. If you already feel like I learned something from this, do you feel like you were able to have that awareness because of your past? I mean, obviously that's how you know, because you had the other thing that happened.
Yep. Entirely. I am amazed daily at how this has gone, because previous versions of me would not have handled things in this way. I would have carried resentment. I would have done a number of different things. And instead, to be able to truly experience love is the coolest thing, you know? So when I look at that relationship with, I'm not kidding. I still think he's stellar. We're still friends. And it's so crazy to me. Was it really hard? Was it heartbreaking? Absolutely. You build out a narrative of what your life is supposed to look like with this person. And then the bottom falls out and you're like, wait a second, what, you know? But I chose not to, you know, we're now, what are we? It's August 23rd. Okay. And that was early June. So we've had some time pass for me to just kind of walk through some of this stuff. And what did I choose to do? Well, shortly after getting sober, I did 75 hard. And that was a really good way for me to put my feet in a good direction. And what am I doing right now? 75 hard.
Oh, you are? When did you start again?
I did it shortly after the breakup. I'm already almost.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Sure. Yeah. Fine.
Yeah. And it's been really cool to see that your baseline changes. But anyway, so I chose to pick up all these tools, right? And I stay plugged into my recovery program and I show up for other women and I do all of these things that allows me the opportunity to get outside of myself. And then the other thing about that that's just a really cool thing is just, you know, at that time during the container of the relationship that was an established romantic partnership, whatever, there were conditions upon it that were, we need to be in this container for this love. And today the container is gone and you just get to, or it's different. You know, you get to be who you are and there's no stipulation on the love. I still love you. I'm not God. I don't know what your journey needs to be. And to be honest, I don't know where mine's headed, you know, but to be able to experience it in that way is like, whoa, that is a result of things I have been taught. Not some inherent knowledge. And that's spiritual life stuff, because I didn't have a spiritual life prior to sobriety. And so that's something that I've been taught to have and to seek a relationship with God since.
I like what you just said too, the narrative for me, like the narrative that I've built around like my marriage, right? Like a huge part of how I've been successful is like that I'm married. And looking at that piece, and if anything were to happen there, like the narrative is what you just said is something I'm really attached to. And I think that's something to be aware of, you know, that's helpful to know. A lot of my ego is connected to like, well, I got married, so I'm not that bad, you know? And so that's something that I do know though, that like I'm attached to with that. So you just mentioned the 75 hard. So you get sober, you do 75 hard immediately, which for those of you guys that are listening, you do an hour of activity every single day. What are the things, the rules?
It's actually crazy. I'm just going to pull it up and show it on screen as well. Okay. There's an app for it. And so like, here's the requirements. And okay. So you've got, you know, two different workouts. The workouts have to be 45 minutes in length at minimum. One of them
twice a
day, two different workouts. And you have to, now I will say my approach the first time and my approach this time don't look the same. My nervous system is enjoying this experience a lot more. I'm a lot more calm in my approach. So we can get into that if you want, but either way, there are two workouts. One of them must be outdoors and they can't be back to back. So you need to allow some time to pass. So there's that. That's like the most laborious when it comes to like time of the day.
Yeah.
By the action. Yeah. That's a good bit. So then you also have to take a progress photo every day, just is what it is, whatever. 10 pages of reading a nonfiction book, drink 1 gallon of water. That's 128 ounces. Get ready to pee all day. It's my least favorite part, but it's fine. Follow a diet. So you select whatever your parameters are, and then you stick to it every day. And then no cheat meals or alcohol, no alcohol. So I knew of this challenge for years before I did the challenge, but because of the alcohol piece of it, I never did it. So shortly after getting sober, I had a friend doing it who had failed one of their days and was restarting. And I said, oh, what do you know? I'm sober now. I'll do it with you.
That's so, and you successfully complete, obviously, I already know the answer to this question. You successfully completed that. You're about to successfully fucking complete this one. I already know. That's really cool. And that, what a great idea. I've actually never had anybody, I've known about 75 Hard for a while. So Nodpod, those of you guys listening, if you're interested, 75 Hard could be something really cool to like throw into your life right now. So you do 75 Hard. You also, at the time, with not a lot of time sober, you reached out to a brand, a fitness brand, and said like, hey, so wait, okay. Were you working, you were a CrossFit person by then, right? But you weren't teaching CrossFit. You weren't a coach yet.
Absolutely not.
Okay. So you enjoyed fitness, but it wasn't your trade yet.
Yeah. By then, I think I held one certification in the CrossFit space.
Okay.
And so I did, and I never coached because I was a real estate agent and I didn't want right. to coach. And so I right. had gotten my level one with CrossFit, which by the way is phenomenal. I recommend it. I have 4 certifications within the CrossFit space today. And I honestly thoroughly enjoyed all of them. I think that that training methodology when applied correctly is beautiful. So I'll say that.
Okay.
And so what we choose to do with it from there and turn it into sport, different conversation as far as like the taxing that it may take on your nervous system, hormones, et cetera. Anyway, so yeah, I was a real estate agent and I reached out to a brand and I was going to go to the CrossFit Games as a spectator. And I heard that this company was having some struggles due to like, this was during COVID times, just getting their employees over for the event. And so I reached out via email a couple of different times. And because what you'll notice here, you said earlier, you know, I'm scared to reach out because I'm scared what they'll think. That just broke for me. And so I really, okay. I don't care. I will slide in your DMs. I will send you an email. I will follow up. I will walk up to you in person. I don't care. And I will say there are some details too that to take into consideration. What are you offering that individual? You know, when you want to ask something, are you giving yeah. them something? And so if you're not giving them anything, the ask may fall flat on its face.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, yeah. So I reached out and said, hey guys, I'm going to be there anyway. I'm more than happy to work for you. I'll be there anyway. And then I didn't hear back. So I sent the email again. And then week of, I got a response.
And they said, sure, help us get our athletes to CrossFit. So yeah,
it was working for a global retailer. And so I was working on their stand. I wasn't doing anything with athletes.
Oh, got it.
At all.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then how do you end up in Austin?
Yeah. So I did go ahead and then from there, so that went extremely well. And then I wound okay. up working multiple other events for that brand.
Okay.
Continued to have conversations with them about the idea of coming on board as their US community lead. And so that was very attractive to me. And when they first pitched me for this, you know, I was happily settled in real estate, comfy cozy. And I was like, well, I'm not actually looking for a job, y'all. But then I was like, well, I'm not really a comfortable kind of girl and I've been comfortable for a while. So sure, here goes. And also let's not even play it any other way. The idea of this big lofty title in this space that I've been passionate. I've been watching that stuff since 2010. I've been
good. CrossFit Games.
Absolutely. And I've been practicing for 7.5 years. Now I did it really badly for a long time, but I've been showing up to that space. So, I mean, I know it like the back of my hand. The sport, the people within it, the creators, all of it. Like it was something that I loved dearly and my community locally loved dearly. So I was so bought in on this thing. And here I get this opportunity to really take this position that's like pretty cool within
yeah.
the space. I choose to do that. So I did go on a road show for that brand that was a contracted position. So I was in different states for months, different. It was pretty high speed and it was way exciting. But anyway, at the end of the road show, we knew that the odds of me moving back to Oklahoma were not likely.
Okay.
And so there were a few cities, few states that were on the table, and Austin, Texas was one of them. I had a conversation with someone involved in that brand who said, Austin, Texas is where we think that you should go. So I said, cool. I did that. And then someone else stepped into the CEO position, which we are so like literally could yet again, I'm grateful for the opportunity. There's nothing bad, but they decided to close down the US operation. So somebody else comes into a powerful position, takes a look at things and decides to do something different than was the plan before. And so I get here and I don't have the job that I thought I had.
How long?
Oh, upon arrival.
Really? Like that same day or the next day they were like, you just moved here. You moved all your shit here and now we're closing the office.
I want to say that, so there was never any office. I was the office. I want to say that I got word maybe 2 weeks after moving.
Oh my God. Yeah. So then
supposed to take after that road show, that was a lot of work. And so it was like, hey, we're going to take 2 weeks off this endeavor. Enjoy yourself. Thank you so much. Okay. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to pick up with this new role. And then that just didn't happen. And yet again, really truly, when I say that, I really mean it. Like, they opened so many doors for me, and like, I wouldn't have started content had the founder not asked me to. I have a great relationship with him today. So it's a net win, but things happen in businesses. It just happens.
Right. Totally. So you're here now, you end up in Austin, and then you end up, so how did you make the decision? So they say like, we're done. And then you decide I'm going to stay rather than go home. Well, actually I have a question before that too. You're on the road in early sobriety. Do you run into cravings and thinking like, I want to drink? And if so, what did you do during that time?
Regarding the cravings and so on, I actually, while on the road, did not experience any cravings, none, zero.
Okay.
Cravings actually didn't come for me until a handful of months ago. And it wasn't even craving as much as I work with some women that are newer in recovery, and I've experienced some people that I love or that I care about relapsing. And so during those kind of caused me some interesting relationship of just, I think, fear. So I don't even know that it was so much craving.
Okay.
It was like, oh, this could happen, you know? So, but this is a great question, because here's the thing. I was on the road. I did not do the things like the things that I had been taught to do, my daily actions that help keep me spiritually fit. I had set them to the side and fully gone in on this endeavor. And so by the time that I got my feet planted again, I was feeling pretty crazy cuckoo. Okay. Although I was not experiencing cravings for substances, what did happen, and I have talked about this, and thankfully it was super brief, but was that an eating disorder that had not come up for me since, I don't know, maybe 19 years old or something like that, it reared its ugly head. So a decade later, I was newly in Austin, jobless, terrified, confused, and hadn't yet plugged back into my program. And I was making myself throw up.
Oh,
and
so, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So thankfully that, I want to say it happened like less than five times. Because the first couple of times, like, I don't know where the thought was. I don't even know that I registered, like, what are you doing? You know, but then thankfully, like by like the third time, I'm like, okay, so this can't happen. This is not an option. And then thankfully, what did I do? I got my recovery program together and got the resources that I needed to be able to deal with life again. And so that's a beautiful thing that you can plug back in, you know, that you can have these experiences where you like pick up all these tools, learn all these tools, set them to the side, and then be like, oh, dang it, I need the tools. Pick your tools back up. It's okay. We're all imperfect.
And that is so, so common, what you just said, because for me also, with the stress of the studio and some other stressors in my life, I don't ever feel like using again, but I super binge eat. And when I was like a teenager, binge eating disorder wasn't a thing. It was just you're either anorexic or you're bulimic. And I wasn't either one of those things. But the binging that I did was super disordered. I mean, we're talking about driving to like three different drive-thrus in 20 minutes so that the people wouldn't know how much I was getting, and eating in the car. I mean, just not just like, oh, I ate too much one night. Like, I mean, really actively binge eating. And that comes up for me now. That is what it looks like when I'm not spiritually fit, which lately is a lot. And the binge eating that I do is unreal. So like, when you got back into the spiritual side of your program, and if you're comfortable sharing, I would love to know for you what that means. Obviously, you don't have to share any religious beliefs if you don't want to, but what it looks like for you spiritually, and that resolved the eating stuff again?
Yeah, totally. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So that came, and I'm because let's get specific, you know, getting specific is really, really useful. So I appreciate you like wanting to do that. I mean, don't get me wrong. When we walk through the pre-recovery stuff, it gets me really uncomfortable. I don't enjoy talking about that.
Sure,
I don't look back on that and have fond memories and be like, wow, proud of her.
Sure.
It's actually quite hard, to be honest, to be willing to speak about it, because now I have to accept that I spoke about it. But also the idea that it could potentially be useful to someone, it outweighs that for me. So anyway, yes, what my spiritual side of things is really, I mean, it just went away. It just straight up went away again.
Yeah.
And so thank goodness. So I was told to establish a relationship with a higher power of my understanding. And so that's what I did. And I was told to pray on my knees every morning, because it is a sign of humility that you are not running the show. And so guess what? I get on my knees and I pray every morning. And for those few months that I went out and went cuckoo, I was not doing that. And right. when I came back to, okay, sweetie, you put down your tools and you're still crazy, I got back on my knees every morning and prayed again. And okay. what do you know? Things got better. So that's okay. that one is like the really big one for me that it's tremendously useful. And I pray to be shown ways to get out of myself. I pray to be shown okay. ways to be not fearful and to help others and to not be selfish and self-seeking and not be dishonest, and show me how I can show up for others and have new experiences and not, you know, carry forth these previous resentments, whatever. I mean, I've been taught those things. Cause that's the thing is like I remember pre being spiritual, even a couple of years prior to getting sober, like being curious. I was agnostic at that time. And I was like, well, I'd like to be open to it, but I don't even know where to start. And so being right. given this action item of, okay, sweetie, you pray every day. And yeah. so, okay. And here is some help with how to do that.
Totally.
Was really, really, really helpful for me.
Do you mind if I ask, is it the seventh step, the 12th step, the AA seventh step prayer is what it kind of sounds like, or the third step prayer, or do you have your own verbiage that you just kind of paraphrased? Because again, you know, getting specific, it's so helpful for people to understand, because the idea of, so I was raised with a very healthy relationship with like God and all that stuff, but most people weren't. So for me, I could hear that and think like, oh, I get it. So because my God is very friendly God. And so I kneel and I think, and I literally will be like, hey man, I super duper need some help right now. You could help me with X, Y, Z. I'm so comfortable saying that because, like, again, the way that my parents are, I was raised with this belief that, like, hey, God's on your side. You can be comfortable. A lot of people don't have that. How did you find the verbiage that you actually close your eyes and say?
Yeah. So in my first year of sobriety, my favorite one was the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. So anybody okay. can look that up anywhere, but yeah. that specific prayer. And don't get me wrong. Here's what's funny is that one was a little woo-woo, right? Like it's a bit wordy and there's a lot going on, but like it's good stuff. And so you could even look at this as an affirmation if you need to, or simply like intention setting or whatever, you know, whatever container that you need to put it in. And I'm not saying anybody needs to do it. It's just a tool that is extremely helpful to me. And so right. anyway, that was one that, and I still love that okay. one, but that was one that within my first year of recovery, I really, really used. And then I still love to use it a lot. There's also just literally, it's called the morning prayer. Like it's just the morning prayer. And that
okay. I love these. Okay.
Yeah. So but I use a bunch prayer. Of things. And the set aside okay. prayer is another one that's a really, really great one too, because, you know, with say, for example, as I walked through this past year, a breakup that I didn't want, you know, I mean, that was the decision that I made. I didn't want that to go that way. No one enters into a romantic partnership hoping that it will fail.
Right.
You know?
I know.
And I don't even know that I want to say fail, because I just have so much fondness. And really, as I reflect on it, I'm like, man, I have nothing but gratitude for that whole experience. I learned so much and I'm not done learning. And so just thank you. But the set aside is super useful in that situation or just in anything in life. You know, it's like, help me to set aside everything that I think that I know and let me have a new experience with this. So let me have a new experience with this individual. You know, let me not carry all of this stuff from the past that's done. And let me just have a new experience. And praying for patience and kindness and tolerance and love, if you pray for it, you just might feel it.
I love this. So the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, I mean, I'll say this all to you guys in the intro, the set aside prayer and the morning prayer. That's super helpful for anybody to like hear and know, because I haven't looked at any of these. So I know the set aside prayer, but not by heart. And so like, and I need the set aside prayer right now. And I need to look
so
at
good.
So, you know, when I have questions for my audience, they're yeah, for me and they just happen to be as crazy as me. So it works. But okay. So you got back and that was able to help you get the eating stuff back dialed in once you got back and got plugged into the spiritual side of things.
Absolutely. I mean, the other detail okay. was just getting a community locally, right? So finding other okay. people in my area that I could relate to and share with. And so I work with a mentor who mentors me. And whenever I start thinking that I want to take some actions and do some things, I'm supposed to call her and talk to her about it, right? And
right.
then flip side of things, you know, I got a bunch of friends that are sober friends. So that helps me. And then I do get the opportunity to walk through early sobriety with newer women and
okay.
help them learn some tools. And so anyway, yet again, that's all stuff that's like been taught to me. Like that's
right.
just a part of the thing that I just simply plug into. It's extremely useful. Like that creates a sense of peace for me.
Okay. So, and then with content creation, were you new? Did you just start your Instagram 2 years ago?
I had an Instagram for years, but I didn't use it for anything in particular.
But as like a person, just as like Claire, the girl, the bartender, and the real estate agent. But in terms of like trying to grow it and make content as an influencer, you started 2 years ago?
I started creating reels in January of 2022 because the founder of that company asked me to do so. So yes, okay. It was at that point. Now, mind you, I still had no intention of growing anything. I just was asked by, okay, so I'm going to go work for your company and something that you're asking me to do is create this short form content thing. So, okay, I'll try. And so that's what I did.
How do you have 40,000 followers now in 2 years?
The algorithm in the spring of 2022 was very favorable to me. It dumped a lot of them on me rapidly. And so when I started,
that's great.
It is. And it's opened so many doors. I really, truly, yet again, I'm like, wow. Okay. So it's been hard to learn alongside this thing because I chose to show up and be vulnerable and honest and transparent and share everything.
And then it went out.
Adversity in life. And I'm like, I don't have anything to say, you know, so it's been hard. But it's been really cool. And being able to use, I mean, truly, it will introduce you before you enter the room. What a gift. So it's really cool. But
what a cool way to look at social media.
Yeah. And it does do that. And so there are some real advantages. There's also, you know, for example, I don't know if you pay any attention to this. And really, if you don't, that's cool. I don't know how I got sucked in over the past week to this thing, but the Paul brothers, Jake and Logan Paul, right?
No, so, I don't think I know. I don't know.
Just mega famous guys that like they started, I think, on Vine and then YouTube and then whatever.
Okay.
They do boxing and whatever. They do a bunch of different things. Anyway, Jake said in something that I recently heard because there's been a lot of controversy around the two of them and somehow it just came up on my YouTube and here we are. And so I loved one of the things that he said is, you know, he was like, man, if you can make money without getting famous, it's probably like not a bad idea because getting famous, which I'm not saying that's where we are at all, but people are paying attention in a way that they weren't before. And so, you know, there's this sudden like expectation. Anyway, he was just speaking to that. And I was like, dang, because one of the things, and I guess when I say that, I'm not even really talking about myself. I have had the opportunity in the past year plus, especially after moving to Austin, Texas, to befriend some people with some very large personal brands. So getting to be a friend to these individuals who have millions of eyeballs on them, it's been an interesting thing to just observe and just hold some space for what they're going through.
Yeah. It is interesting too, in the recovery space too, because there's a dichotomy and I can see you handle it well. Obviously you're choosing to stay super anonymous and like vague, right? Which is what the program asks for, which is good that you're doing that and you're handling it really well. And I'm like taking notes as we speak, right? Like saying mentor instead of the other word. That's good because that's what we're supposed to do. And I don't know if you've ever run up against anybody saying anything to you about speaking about it publicly. Now you probably won't because you're not using any of the words, but like I have, I'll be like, AA, AJ, whatever. And I was actually in a meeting Saturday and I said something and shared and I have 50,000 followers on TikTok. It's not a lot. I mean, it's a lot, but it's not a lot.
Yeah.
And someone said, I heard someone go, that's the chasing heroin girl. And I was like, and I'm not famous. And when that happened, I was like, whoa. And I was super grateful. I'm so glad because like, I definitely want my platform to connect to people and I want it to be able to connect to women in recovery. But even that for me was a little weird. And like you said, like, I'm not famous, but even that for a second was like, you have to really process before you start like leaning into the space that might happen. And then what will you do with that? You know?
You show up authentically and people like that.
Right. Yeah.
So the following came from the fact that at that time I was just making this, I was largely making short form content for promotion of a brand's products. And I was just being funny. I was having fun was being funny. And so the algorithm really, really enjoyed that and gave me some real boosts. And so there's
That's crazy.
And then from there, now all of these people who showed up have had to walk through life with me where I suddenly transitioned into this coach role. And they're like, what are you doing? You were just a clapping monkey. What are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's been an interesting transition where people have had to kind of like grow alongside me and a lot of them have left and that's totally okay. But it's exciting because I didn't have this intention going into it of I'm going to grow a personal brand. I'm going to be a coach. And now I'm like, oh, coaching is really freaking cool. And I am intentionally growing it again, which I will say that I didn't intentionally grow it. And then I got freaked out by it and I didn't intentionally grow it. And I'm finally coming into this like season of like, okay, it's okay to go ahead and intentionally grow it again, which is exciting.
Yeah. So are you going to speak about the breakup at some point on social media? I mean, you're probably not there yet. Yeah. With me or you mean, because you have it on Instagram yet, right?
I have not said anything publicly anymore.
Okay. Okay. Not that you need to. I just, for me, like as I'm, because I'm kind of going through something vulnerable right now too, and I haven't said anything about it. And I'm like, do I at some point? But then you also have to factor in like the other person and their life and what do you want to say, you know? So.
And this is just for me, you know, allowing time. Because in the moment, when you're experiencing emotions at magnitude, you know, one of the things that I love to reflect on all the time is that we don't make long-term decisions based on short-term emotions. And so whenever I feel heightened, whether it's anger, sadness, excitement, you know, whatever, to try to pause and think, you know, does this actually, am I being reactive in this moment? And so anyway, so why have I not publicly said anything to this point? Because I just kind of needed some time to kind of navigate any of it. And why am I choosing to say a word about it now? Because I feel like it's okay to do. And also I can do so in such a respectful way because I truly respect this individual.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So you're a coach now at The Collective in Austin, which is an amazing high-end.
No, I'm a coach at Collective on it. No, it's okay. It's okay.
You're a coach on, what do you mean?
On at gym. So on at gym is also.
Do you work out at The Collective? Why do I have Collective in my head?
Totally okay. No. So I actually, from the time of October to March, October 2022 to March 2023, was a coach at Collective.
Oh, okay. Yes. I must have heard one of your interviews from during that time.
Nothing but love. Like, I think what they're doing is so freaking cool. Yeah.
Right. And so now you're a coach at this place that you just said on it. Okay, cool. Awesome. So what else is going on with you now? Talk about like where people can find you. You have an app, which is super cool. I know you're paused on your show, but you do have a podcast that you'll return to at some point. Tell everybody what's going on with you now and how they can access more of you.
Totally. Yeah. So one, just like, thank you for creating this space for people to hopefully come here and glean something worthwhile for themselves. And like, just for showing up for yourself in this way, the fact that you're over 100 episodes into this thing, like, thank you for holding the space. So where they can find me is at Claire Bays on Instagram is going to be the most like common spot. So that's just Claire Bays. It's just my name. So I hang out there at pretty high volume, I suppose, in comparison to other things. You can find me on YouTube. I've got some stuff there. I haven't been doing anything there recently. I do have a podcast, which has something like 41, 42 episodes out. And at some point will probably return, but I've needed to dump a lot of energy into my coaching business. And so chosen to stop doing so many things and to try to really polish the thing. And so that's a journey in and of itself. Like I said, I mean, I got here and it was like, okay, I guess I'll just do everything because I have no idea what I am doing or want to be doing. So it's cool that in this length of time, and I mean, check back in a year, but the coaching business is really, really where my energy is being dumped and I'm loving it. And so I do some one-on-one in person on at gym. And so that's, if you're local to Austin, you can reach out to me and one-on-one sessions are an option there. That's a lower volume thing. And then the other thing is I do online coaching, which is like so freaking cool. And so if you go to clairebayscoach.com, that's where you can find all the info about it. Like you said, so it's an app. So people get customized meal plans to like their goals, where they're at, et cetera. There's just hundreds of recipes in this thing. And so anyway, so you get customized meal plans, you get customized workout programs. And so whether you're working out at home or you're working out at a gym, if you're planning on doing it 3, 4, 5 days a week, whatever, we collaborate through that. And so you get your progressive plans all within there. And then in addition to that, I offer, there's group coaching and then there's one-on-one coaching. And so those are two different offerings, but you get all of that. And then you also, so like the group gets a once weekly video call with me and they get access to a private community. And then the one-on-one, we also do some more handholding. It's just a bit more hands-on, but I mean, that in and of itself has been so freaking cool. And really as cool. That community is growing and as people are just seeing tremendous results, I'm just so bought in on what we're doing there.
That's really cool. I love that. Okay. Last question. If someone's listening and they have gone through an experience like the one that you shared, because that happens to people where something gets caught on camera and shared, that's happened. and they're in the early days of it, what do you recommend, like, action-wise that someone can do to try to just simply move past it? Because it is literally all that you can do. But if you're someone still spinning in that moment, what are a few things you can say, like, to do to just, like, try to get through it?
So if you, one, find a recovery community and plug in. And, period. If you don't know how to find a recovery community to plug into, you can, I bet, send you a direct message or send me a direct message. And I bet you we'll get back to you and we'll get you a resource. So reach out to us directly and let us help you find that if you don't know how to find that. The other thing that I can just think of to say is that, you know, I remember coming into recovery and all of a sudden I'm supposed to take suggestions from strangers and I'm going, I don't know, y'all. I don't trust you. Let's be real. What was I up to before I got there? Those people did not have my best interest at heart. These people actually have my best interest at heart. So that's another thing is just when I came in and I was early, I had this aversion to being willing to take suggestion of like, I don't know you yet. We haven't built rapport. And it's like, so you actually have my best interest at heart. So maybe it would be a worthwhile thing. So anyway, yet again, I can't speak to knowing everyone everywhere, but that was something that was useful to me to be like, lean into this. This is actually like, they do want you to heal, you know, and they've got tools. So yeah.
So now this will be my last question. Spotting the person, the mentor that you wanted, how did you identify this is the person that I really want to key into working with? Did you look for?
Yeah, they were just really serious about it. She was a hard ass.
Okay.
And I wanted that. And she seemed to understand well. She seemed to have time of in recovery and understand well those details. And so, but yet again, I mean, literally just don't miss out on it. You know, I mean, having time isn't a requirement to be able to do it well, you know, as much as that's what I chose to look for, just get plugged in and let people help you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it so much. I'm so glad that we got to connect. I thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
And yeah, I just really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. And guys, when you're listening, like go, I mean, I'm sure you already do, but like go follow along with her. And really, if you want to, I would assume that it's probably the case for you, but like you probably are actually reachable.
Yes. Oh, yeah. If you DM me, I see it. I always check on Instagram. I always check because, you know, it goes to hidden requests if you don't follow them. I check all the time. Like it tells me I have a request. I always look. And TikTok now too is just open. You can send somebody a message request on TikTok as well. So yeah. Yes, I do check.
Yeah. I think that that's like a cool thing to touch on is that oftentimes people don't know that it's like a reciprocal thing. And it's like, no. Typically like often creators, I mean, I guess if you get to a certain point, there's only so much volume that you have the capacity to do. But I find in my experience that getting to actually build relationship is very meaningful to me. And if it's extremely hands-off, then it doesn't feel the same for me. And so like you deserve to get something in return out of this for choosing to put your energy into this. And that maybe just looks like being better connected with a consumer, you know? So I think as a consumer, it can be really easy to be fearful and be like, they're surely too busy. They're surely whatever. And it's like, maybe they would enjoy actually knowing you.
Yeah, totally. No, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. So yeah, y'all DM Claire.
I can DM you.